Well, guess what, everybody? We're back in the garage.
Yeah, because of, ATC vacation and honeymoon schedules.
Yeah, all of the producers are gone. Everyone that can run that board is either on a vacation.
Or on the lam.
On the lam. They're, maybe some of them might be in Guantanamo being
who knows?
Questioned.
Who knows?
I cannot confirm or deny certain people in their locations. But yeah, we had a crazy, I had a thing on Tuesday. There's this cool show that I'm going to be directing and producing. I can't announce it officially yet, but there's just a lot of contract business going back and forth to get the deal done. When it does happen, I'll be able to talk about it. It'll be a very cool thing. But that was the reason I gave Chris a... an insane phone call on Tuesday
while I was on my way to the studio.
While driving to the studio, Sean literally texted me, be there right on time at 1:00. And I texted back, no, you won't.
I was about to go into the prison that is the 405. But thankfully, it's not anything to do with like a shortage of like coconut water or anything like that. That was
a coconut water shortage,
or some sort of samurai shoe crisis or something like that.
There wasn't like a missing katana.
Yeah.
It wasn't like some Ronin showed up at my door and I had to just figure some stuff out.
Yeah, or a katana accident.
It wasn't a katana accident. It wasn't like, Chris, my shogun has summoned me. Yeah. I cannot come to ATC Studios.
Yeah, I don't want to be a Ronin.
I don't want to, you know.
I have to do what my...
It wasn't like my shogun asked me to execute this child, so I then took the child and now I'm lone wolf and cub. There was nothing. Wasn't that...
I'm just imagining you showing up here with like a kid being like, this is it now, guys.
Sorry, guys. Yeah. I'm on the run from the Shogun's elite warriors. So we're here back in the garage. So sorry to announce that there's no YouTube videos this week. Whenever we're in the garage.
There is no YouTube videos.
There's no cameras allowed.
Yeah. For space reasons. We're already about to get smothered by Thrilling Adventure Hour shirts.
Thank God, though, we are here a day or so after the heat.
Oh, yeah, the crazy heat.
It'll still get hot in this garage, but I don't know that we could have done this.
Yeah, we need to talk faster.
Okay. This episode's going to be 6 minutes long, everybody. Movie, DVD, book it. Go. God, thanks. First of all, I want to say Los Angeles Podcast Festival is a month away. A little less than a month, October 6th through the 8th. We have now put on, many of you have emailed about being volunteers. If you go to lapodfest.com/volunteer or just go to, there's a volunteer tab. So it tells you all the stuff you need to do to become a volunteer. If you've done it in the past, there'll be a new volunteer coordinator this year. We're not quite sure who it is, but it won't be last year's. and
New blood.
So so if you want to be a volunteer, go check that out. And then you've already heard his lovely voice, but let's officially introduce our guest, formerly an intern of this fine program, has one fantastic podcast called Worst Collection Ever that we've both been on. And was at the Sideshow Network, which sadly went under, and we have
R.I.P.
We have one more coffee
one
mug.
One more
left
mug, yeah, to give away.
Maybe we'll give it to this guy.
Now we'll have seven.
I imagine you just have like a closet full of them. Like,
right. I have so many. Like,
by the way, Sean Merrick, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you.
And now you work at Podcast One.
I do work at Podcast One, yes.
You have a serving set of Sideshow Network.
I picture
mugs.
You like built a carport out of Sideshow mugs and Sideshow swag for you, like.
I know. I have like little podcast, devices, things, like I have like a table and mic stands and all that stuff.
Was amazing is even like Sideshow Network went under and we still had to fulfill a Sideshow Network tier on Kickstarter. And Sean was like, it's not going to affect anything. I've already got the stuff put aside. So it didn't matter. He still had the those rewards still went out.
Those are now collector's items, exactly. Ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Sideshow Network is a
They're worth 0 to 10 cents.
Somewhere needs to start a podcast museum. No, we're not going to do it. We're not going to kickstart it. Someone else needs to do this. But if you do, I would put a Sideshow swag in there.
Absolutely.
You should. Particularly whoever got that might want to donate that.
There'll be a Walking the Room logo on there. There'll be a lot of cool things.
The Naughty Show.
Yeah, yeah. There'll be a lot of cool things.
Can we do a Pod Crash with Chris Gore exhibit?
Yeah.
That'll be good.
So how is Worst Collection Ever going? Tell us a little bit about that. We know what it is, but tell the audience what that show is, because it's a lot of fun.
Worst Collection Ever is myself and my wife, Jen Stansfield Merrick, doing our show where we basically take our comic book collection, where we've amassed a lot of lame comic books, or we've messed a lot of comic books, you know, a lot
I
of
did
them.
One with man was it Mandarin I did
so you did
Mandrill?
Your so you did a Defenders one,
all right,
which with the character Mandrill in it, who is a half man half
monkey
drill. No, no, but he yeah, so yeah, you did that, and then we also did a World's Finest.
Oh, right.
Where Superman conducted surgery.
Yes. But the Defenders one was ludicrous.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was like, it was such a fun episode, and it's such a cool premise of a podcast, because you find some just insane, ridiculous stuff.
Yeah.
Usually stuff from the 70s.
Well,
right?
70s, 80s. We do a lot of 90s, too, because that's kind of the era that I really glommed onto for comic books. But, you know, like, for instance, this week we did a Cable, the Cable from the 90s. And it's dumb. And we've, you know, none of us are really X-Men experts, but, you know, we found a way to make it ridiculous. And that's what we do pretty much each week, is we take a book, we find a way to make it ridiculous, because sometimes we buy stuff for the show, but sometimes we just buy stuff because we have questionable tastes. Uh-huh. And we'll just be like, okay, well, we got to justify these purchases because we have all these comics. I mean, I haven't sorted them out in months, so they're just all over the place now. And we just got to find ways to talk about them and make it funny. And it's really, you know, it's great, because I get to hang out with my wife. We get to bullshit and just dish on stuff. And it's a lot of fun. And I really hope that people find a way to check it out. I've actually had people that have heard me here on this show leave comments on iTunes or on Apple Podcasts and saying, hey, I heard Sean and he was funny on Comedy Film Nerds, and I checked out a show and here's some 5 stars. So
that's great.
Hopefully we get to repeat that, because we definitely would love more people to check it out. It's a blast for us, and hopefully it's a blast for you guys. It's Worst Collection Ever on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and
everywhere but Sideshow Network.
Everywhere but Sideshow Network. You want to?
Where are you? So now, and what are you doing at Podcast One?
So at Podcast One, I am,
because you became an official. You're a producer. You're
producer
a
producer over there, right?
Yeah,
I'm basically what you were doing at Sideshow, or a little different. Or?
I was a senior producer at Sideshow, and then after I left, my prior director Roddy left, and I took over, you know, until the end, and then Sideshow went under, and it wasn't my fault. Because it makes it sound like it's like, well, I took it over and then it died, you know. No, basically, you know, Levity Entertainment, the group that was running the network, you know, or being was behind the network, just felt
didn't want to fund it,
didn't want to continue on with it, because it wasn't. I mean, it had a lot of cool things with it, and there's a lot of really good potential opportunities, but I feel like, I mean, and I could, I'm not going to talk about this a ton, but it just wasn't like a thing where you're like, oh, wow, we're bathing in cash from it, you know, and I felt that they maybe expected it to be a lot more financially profitable, you know, which, I mean, it was in certain regards, but in, you know, in the end, it, to really justify it, you know, they couldn't see it, and it's a shame, because, you know, I think that if there was more more patience and more understanding in certain regards to podcasting, I think just overall with podcasting,
I mean it's a great point. I think everybody needs a little patience with it, although, because what happens is
it needs time to grow
and people see, like, these handful of shows that have blown up and are making big money, and everybody thinks it's just that that happens immediately and can happen to anyone, and they don't really factor in all of these other issues that created that. Like,
right.
Like, you know, Joe Rogan or Adam Carolla already had huge followings elsewhere. Right.
Yeah, followings, you know, that were developed over years of their craft.
That they just brought them to another medium.
They brought them to another medium. Right. I mean, same thing with like similar, you know, even Maron, you know, had been on Conan and Letterman a bunch of times.
He still had fans.
He still had fans.
Yeah.
And same thing with Benson, same thing with Hardwick.
Yeah. Like I was saying, or just in terms
Hardwick
of...
Hardwick had the G4 following.
He had G4 following, yeah. And then he, you know, he established some relationship with someone at Legendary who put... I know that person put in some kind of money initially, and then when they built it up, then Legendary bought it out. So it was like...
That's a great way to put your money in a circle.
Yeah. But it's also like, I mean, you know, if somebody came to us now or 7 years ago and gave us, you know, several hundred thousand dollars, we could have grown this a lot faster than how we've grown it.
Sure.
We've grown this. It's been cool, but it's been very sort of incremental. And that's the thing is everybody just expects. And so then when they see the sort of, I don't even want to use the term fluke, but like, whatever, like My Favorite Murder, it's a fantastic show. Shows like that somehow just blow up in a couple of years. And what, you know, a big show got behind it. Like all these things have to kind of line up.
Yeah.
And to expect that that's just going to happen with everything you do and your entire network is like.
Well, there's a perfect storm to a lot of podcasting success stories. Like, I mean, obviously Serial was a huge factor, I think, in making a show like My Favorite Murder be what it is, because
the audience was already listening to
the podcasts. Audience was already there. And yeah, and they had, and they put the show out and it just felt like, okay, if you're,
and Serial was a phenomenon.
Serial's a phenomenon.
And a lot of those shows, though, still they is. Also had the backing of, like, NPR.
Yeah, they have their backings and stuff.
You know, American Public Radio, all those shows do.
Yeah.
But, so,
but,
go ahead.
I was going to say, but just, you know, it, you know, with regard to, you know, show, I mean, because also, too, a lot of times people just, they also look at podcasting and they might see it as like, oh, this was easy, this is something, whatever, and they don't realize sometimes that it's, there's a lot more that goes into this stuff, and you have to really, again, have patience and just maybe a bit more of an analytical eye. And you know, that's something that, like, I've definitely, you know, working with Sideshow and working with Roddy and all the people there, you know, we try to bring that to, you know, our network and try to, you know, make it the best it was, you know, best it was, you know, but there's also, you know, a lot of other factors in terms of, like, you know, behind the scenes stuff that doesn't really, you know, stuff that's out of my control, you know, and that's how, you know, sometimes these things kind of go away or they kind of change, you know, they evolve, and it's, you know, it, you can't really say how it's going to be one way or the other, you know, going into it. But, you know, but I had to look, I will say I had a wonderful time working for Sideshow and being with Sideshow and bringing what we did to the table. You know, we had Gilbert Gottfried's podcast.
You had a lot of cool shows. I mean, I always liked going over there. You guys had a nice studio facility and, you know, we always had a nice relationship between Sideshow and the podcast festival. And it's a cool thing, but, you know, whatever. Everything doesn't, nothing.
Roddy told me a story about, you know, one of the reasons Sideshow Network was a sponsor of LA Podfest was because Roddy would always push it through. And he would, like, because people above him, corporate, were like, oh, what are you doing? It's like, oh, you know, sorry, I just, this is what, you know, we should be doing.
Whoops.
Yep, I'm sorry.
And I would still try to push it through, too, you know, because that's...
Well, it started with Rod... Darren. Darren, you know, was a big advocate for the festival, and he saw us there year one and was like, wow, let's be involved, and, you know...
So, yeah, we were sorry to see them go. Yeah. So,
Now I'm at Podcast One, and I'm working on a number of shows there. I actually work on shows like The Ross Report, which is with Jim Ross, the pro wrestling announcer. I also just started doing behind the scenes stuff for Steve Austin's show.
Nice. All right.
So I've been working with him, and I also work with Mick Garris, Postmortem with Mick Garris.
Right, we had him on.
You guys had him on, and also which I work on, Kirkus Reviews, which is a book review podcast, and also something that I'm bringing to the podcast festival, The Raven Effect. I'm bringing it to the podcast festival preview night, which is something we'll talk about. Or do you want to talk about it now?
Because we can just mention it real quick. It's the thing you pushed for. It's at the Hollywood Improv the Thursday before.
Yeah, so the Thursday before, we're doing, again, it's the third year in a row we're doing this. It's the podcast festival preview night, where we, you know, work with the podcast, the improv, and you guys to put together a show of just nothing but podcasts in the improv that night. So every show, you know, the late shows and the early shows are all podcasts. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of a way that I envisioned it as like a, you know, podcast festival proper is like WrestleMania. Well, when people come into WrestleMania, leading up to WrestleMania, there are all these other indie shows and all these events going on around. So why not do something like that for people coming in a little bit early and just here to kick it and see how, you know, see what the vibe is like, you know, when you have a night to come in a little bit early and check out some cool shows. So this year we're bringing in, so we have in the lab, we have Time Suck with Dan Cummins. Mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of that guy. He's a funny dude, and he does a history podcast, but it's a funny history podcast, kind of like Dan Carlin.
Great.
And so he's going to be on at the 8 o'clock or 7:30 show in the lab, and then the 9:30 show in the lab is going to be the Raven Effect with pro wrestler Raven. He's a show that I would produce on Podcast One, but he's a, you know, he's a very silly dude. He's got a lot of very unique personality, and he's got, you know, his personality in wrestling is more of like a. I described him as like an Edgar Allan Poe meets dystopia kind of thing. Hmm. You know, but he's always like, you're saying, he's like the, you know, he used to, you know, be like a Gen Xer, you know, what about me? What about Raven? And if you watched ECW, or he's wrestling all of them, ECW, WCW, TNA, WWF, he's wrestled everywhere.
All right.
And so we're bringing him into.
I didn't realize there were that many wrestling organizations
are
now.
There, well, some of them aren't around, like ECW and WCW aren't around, but, you know, there are still quite a few. And but he's coming in to do the 9:30 show. And then in the main room, 8 o'clock, we have Rob Has a Podcast with Rob Sesternino. Right. Rob's a
reality show guy.
He's what?
He's started on a reality show, right?
He did. He started on Survivor, and he is kind of brought his he's kind of created this empire of podcasts based around mostly reality TV, but also around other like recap shows. He's doing like a Seinfeld rewatch. He does a lot of like bigger things that drop on Netflix, like House of Cards and Orange is the New Black. He does a lot of recap shows for that, and he's built this empire, or he's like an impresario for podcasts, you know, just for kind of that thing. But he's got a very dedicated following, and he's a funny guy, and he's sharp, and he's done live shows before at the Improv, and I've known him for years because he was a part of Sideshow for a little while. Mm-hmm. And I highly recommend everybody check him out. And
let's talk some movies.
Well, I got one more show to miss. All right. Sorry, 10:15.
Wow, if Graham's trying to get the show back on track, you know.
Sorry about that. So 10:15, Who Weekly on the HeadGum Network. Bobby Finger and Lindsay Weber, they do kind of like a pop culture review show, and they're coming in from New York, and we're really excited to have them. So hollywood.improv.com, go to October 5th, and please check out the tickets. They're individually sold for each show, and if you're a weekend pass holder for the PodFest, you do get in for free.
Okay. All right, guys, so get your weekend passes at lapodfest.com. Mm. We're putting out the lineups and everything like that. We're adding shows, so it'll be fun. Let's talk
Let's do it. Let's talk about some movies.
Let's talk about the one we all saw,
Death. Yes, let's talk about it. Yeah, this movie was a mess. To start, we can say it was a mess, but I was reading through some of the trivia, and I found it to be very entertaining, actually more entertaining than the film. During post-production, the office was broken into, and a flash drive containing some VFX shots were stolen. Apparently, that drive was never recovered.
Ooh.
So, I'm just assuming, based on the VFX shots in the film. So... right before production, Warner Brothers dropped the project, but since Adam Wingard was passionate about the project, the studio let him move the film into another platform with Netflix buying the rights. We get on studios all the time about the dumb decisions that they make. can't fault him for this one. here's the thing. Even if you're a fan of the manga comic or the anime or whatever, no one was really clamoring for a live-action Death Note. And a lot of these things don't translate. It's like, I'm a big fan of Ghost in the Shell as an anime, but I had no desire at all to see Scarlett Johansson in a live-action version of it. Some of these things simply don't translate, and they're not supposed to. Like, there's a reason why they're in anime, because it... the other thing, too, is you have some of the cultural things that are shown in anime don't always translate over to a Western audience. And I think this is definitely one of those times. It was really one of those movies that was like all these random rules, and then the rules get broken. And then the premise is, if you don't know, is a book falls out of the sky, and you can write someone's name in it, and then that person will die. And you can also talk about their the way they die, too. But there's a keeper of the book, and then there's a mascot that comes with the book. That
the book comes with the mascot. So like when you buy a Happy Meal, like yes. dirt one, and there's and you get a Transformer figure.
Yeah, exactly. You get a Death God that comes with it, played by Willem Dafoe. Who
is that? McDonald's that does the Death God? Or is that Burger King?
I think so. If you eat enough burgers, you get a Death God.
That's how you look when you get
like a porcupine weirdo.
And then this, you know, the movie just meanders from one weird plot point to the next. It's like, all right, well, if he's the keeper of the book, so he writes down who gets killed, and then turns out and is like, okay, well, no, anybody can kind of write in the book, but if he's the keeper, what does that even matter if anybody can kind of write a name in the book?
Yeah.
And and then
it is dumb.
And then there's all these other different rules that just show up randomly.
Well, he didn't read them all.
No, he didn't read them all.
I would have read them all.
But also, it didn't even matter, because it was just like, they were trying to use the rules to move the plot along, and it did had the opposite effect. It just made it more muddled.
Well, yeah, when they, I was really, the first part of this movie, 20 minutes or so, I was like, all right, this is a cool premise.
Yeah.
And the whole, the ethical and moral dilemma of, you know, am I just going to use this to get back at people I matter, or maybe we can do some good? And so I'm going to have all these awful gangsters and these human traffickers and all these people, I'm going to have them kill themselves. And like,
premise wise, it's interesting.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
No.
There's a lot of rules. I was like, okay, how are they going to figure this out? But then that was the thing, when all of a sudden, like, you know, we'll do a spoiler up on this, so we'll go into more details. But then, like you say, when other people are writing in the book, I was like, well, wait a minute, what does that mean? And if you're going to show that to me, then show me the rule that says only another person can write the book, only if they, you know, what
right.
their fucking thing is. Then give me those rules, since you've told me out front there's so many rules.
Only if they send in their social security number and ID.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Then,
yeah, what's the point of having a keeper of the book if anybody can write it?
Yeah, why does he get it if it falls out of the sky?
And the Death God likes apples. That's the other thing.
Was he a horse? was Willem Dafoe, was Willem Dafoe as Groot a horse?
Yeah.
He was some type of Groot horse.
It was like douche Groot.
Groot horse porcupine hybrid.
I did like Willem Dafoe. I thought he played the creepy.
And he looked like he was having fun doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, I thought he was good. I thought the L character, I thought the guy...
Like at Stanfield?
Yeah, but I thought he was great. Only because he had to do a lot of acting with his eyes and just kind of...
Didn't like using chairs properly.
Yeah, I know.
He would always perch.
Look, I'm gonna divert a little bit from what you guys say, and I kind of liked it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of things about it that I didn't quite appreciate, but, you know, I kind of have a bit more interest now to check out some more of Adam Wingard's work. I know that he's done You're Next, and did he do...
what was the other movie he did? Was it The Guest?
Or was it It Follows? No, did he do that?
No, he didn't do It Follows.
He did... he did do The Guest. He did You're Next. He did the Blair Witch remake.
Oh, that's right.
Right, I forgot.
VHS 2.
I forgot about that one. So he has Tim Burton syndrome. He needs to do his own thing. Whenever he gets put on a licensed property, things go south.
Uh-huh.
It's really, he has just kind of a vision.
I really
like
The Guest. The Guest was really interesting.
It's his movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think there were some cool aspects to this. I mean, like, he is a filmmaker I probably will check out just because he's doing some interesting stuff.
Yeah, and he also has kind of some signature graphic violence that were definitely in the movie. Like, you're like, well, you kind of, if you follow Adam Wingard, you know, well, there's going to be something gruesome in here.
Well, it's almost like, it's kind of something like, I love, like Dario Argento and like Lamberto Bava. Like, I just saw Demons at the New Beverly the other day, and just a lot of,
there's some gore in that.
Just gore, but just like goofy, sometimes goofy gore, but it also works within the context, you know?
Right.
And I thought it was, you know, I was cool with that, you know, but at the same time, you know, I had some issues with the character motivations and just, I don't know, maybe just sometimes, obviously it's a movie, so you have to move the plot along, but everything, but there's also parts in it where I'm just like, okay, that seems a bit too extreme for humans, you know, for real life, and it doesn't feel, you know, like I really have to suspend disbelief. You know, in this regard.
From frame one, you really have to suspend this.
I mean, obviously, yeah. But I mean, just kind of the idea is that, like,
which is easier to do in anime because it's already, you know, you're already in that medium where, like, anything can kind of happen. So you're already a little more prepared for it. Mm-hmm. But, like, one of the comments here, the producer said that it will be one of the first manga adaptations that feels very grounded but still has fantastical elements. No. This movie was not grounded at all. No. It was all over the place in the sky and in the clouds and everywhere. The last thing I would call this movie would be grounded.
Well, it's the thing we've talked about with science fiction, but even when you're doing sort of science fiction-y horror thriller stuff, we say this time and time again, if you're whatever rules you establish, just fucking stick to them.
Right.
It's not that hard. Like, no,
could set up any rule you want.
Any rule you want. If it's just stick to it. Yeah. And how come no one is on the set going, wait a minute, didn't we?
We already remember the first act we shot?
Yeah. Like, I know you're shooting shit out of order, but isn't the script supervisor or somebody going, well, I thought we established this.
Right.
And then it's like, well, no, there's a rule that says this. Well, then we need to shoot that scene to explain that. Oh. Like,
so, well, the script supervisor was actually Willem Dafoe as a horse Groot. So he was
right. Just,
okay. So they'd be like, what's the line? He'd be like, and then he'd just eat an apple and run away. But I mean, there's, okay, here's the thing that I really notice about this movie. Did any of you guys feel that it was too long, even though it was 90 minutes?
Yes.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I was like, oh, God, and I had to watch it in two sittings, and I was starting, God, this movie's dragging on. I felt like, God, this is like a 2.5-hour movie, and I was like, I'm only 50 minutes in?
Right. Yeah, there's a point where it feels like it's very definitive. I'm like, okay, the end of the movie's coming. And because admittedly,
Then you've got 45 minutes left.
Yeah, I saw that and I was like, wait a minute, what else are we doing here? Like, what else are they going to do? Are they going to, you know, show every letter, you know, being written in there? What is going on? But
And one of the interesting things, too, was like completely glossed over is like, well, how does the book move from keeper to keeper? What are the rules for moving back and forth? And, you know, it was alluded to as like, well, what if I write the death god's name in the book? And the death god was like, well, people have tried, they've only gotten two letters in. So like, but there was something interesting about that. Like, is there a way to destroy the book? Or like all these things, you could tell that it was just got completely glossed over or missed or were just omitted.
Let's talk more about it in the spoiler.
Absolutely.
These are the specific details I really want to get into. So,
right.
So,
all right. So listen to the spoiler and we will do more Death Note. And I have a little more trivia too.
Okay.
So let's go to the next movie, Gook. Now you saw this.
I got to say, I'm glad I saw it. I had quite a dilemma.
So. Was it a palate cleanser from Death Note?
Nah, whatever. The thing, Death Note was Netflix, so I don't. There isn't a like, Jesus, I went all the way to this theater and
spent this money. Exactly.
God damn it. It was just sort of like, all right, when it got boring, I stopped it and watched it the next day. So
right.
I was very torn Saturday night. I didn't have a show and was like, Godfather 1 and 2, 35mm prints were playing at the Arrow near my house.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, ooh, or this movie. And I was like, well, I need to talk about, I wanted to see this movie and I want to support independent filmmakers. And while I love Godfather 1 and 2, I have seen both of them 35mm prints multiple times on the screen, and I'm sure I'll get to see them again. So I would,
it's not going away.
It's not going away. They're classic masterpieces, and if it's another 5 years before I get to see them on the big screen, it'll always be beautiful.
Have you ever seen the version where they combine both of them together?
No.
Yeah, I think Cable or somebody showed it where they combined both of them together because Godfather 2 has a lot of flashbacks in it.
Oh.
So they literally put it together.
They did them linear?
They did them linear, yeah, from start to finish.
God, I would fucking love that. That is the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. But I was like, I want to support this. And I'm glad I did. It's a very inventive movie. The writer-director and lead actor is Justin Chan. And I want to bring it up on IMDb here. It's interesting in a lot of ways. First of all, it's God damn, my phone, who the fuck keeps calling? I want to bring up the thing. So the guy, the lead actor, is also the writer-director. And so it feels very authentic to me in the sense that it takes place on the day of the Rodney King verdict and subsequent riots.
Yes.
So I think that was April 29th, 1992. So, and that when that actually happened, there was a lot of violence between the Black and Korean communities here in L.A., and I remember
specifically in those neighborhoods.
In those neighborhoods, yeah, mm-hmm. Because there's I remember reading afterwards there was a lot of part of it was cultural in terms of like in the American culture, you come in, you make eye contact, hey, how you doing? My name's Graham. That's how you introduce yourself. That's rude in many Asian, specifically the Korean culture. You come in and if I'm coming into a store, especially if you're an elder, I bow and I don't make eye contact. You know, and so, you know, if you're an American and a Korean kid comes in your store and isn't making eye contact with you, you think what's in our culture? That's like, well, this person's shifty, you know, while they're being actually respectful. So then you come in all, hi, how you doing, American? And they're like, you're being rude. So there's just a lot of cultural differences. And this goes into just some very specific people. It's taking place in Paramount, which was not in South Central where the real big riots were happening, but some stuff goes down and you see, they do a very good job. The filmmaker does a very excellent job of setting up how these tensions didn't just pop off on one day. They had been there for a while. And the thing I thought it was very interesting, it's in black and white.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, nice. It felt like an indie film from the 90s. It felt like a Spike Lee movie or something like that. Which was cool because I felt like I was in the night, you know, did a very good job of bringing you into the 90s. And then it just had really, it had really good, solid actors. So
the writer and director, writer and lead actor, Justin Chan, he was 11 at the time of the Rodney King LA riots.
So yeah, he's remembering that and you're seeing it because there's this little girl that comes by the studio, Simone Baker, and you know she.
When you say studio, what you mean? The shop.
The shop, right? She comes by their shop. They sell shoes in their neighborhood. So Simone Baker does. I mean, she's an amazing young actress. She's only done like American Horror Story and you know a couple other things because she's young. But she's hanging out with them. And I feel like my guess is the director sort of drew from when he was 11, probably hanging out with people and when it all went down. And he also cast the role of Mr. Kim. There's an old Korean liquor store across the street from their shoe store. And he's kind of he's a mean old man. And the director said he wrote the role for his father, for his father, and he had his father play it. And apparently it took his dad 3 months to get convinced to play the role.
Yeah. He had to talk to his agent.
Well,
it was a tough sell.
Yeah. The dad apparently was like the nature of the film and what he actually went through, and it was too similar, too close for him. It was hard.
And he wanted participation.
Yeah. He wanted back end points on a black and white independent film. Smart. I would have gotten more upfront money, personally. But no, it's a really cool little movie, and I highly recommend it. It has a very limited release. That's why I decided to see this, because I wanted to see it on the big screen, because visually it's really interesting with black and white, and it talks a lot about LA and the cultural differences and racism, and it's the riots through Korean people's point of view.
I feel that's a perspective.
We haven't seen yet.
You don't see a lot of.
No, so. We haven't. We've gotten the riots through, black people's point of view and that community a lot, which is good. We should talk about that. But we've never seen this. And it's funny. We've talked about a lot of good movies coming out of South Korea. But this is a good voice. This is an American with a Korean American making this film. And it's like, this is a filmmaker, man. I want to see more what he's going to do, because it's one of those filmmakers that you go, oh God, this movie, wow, this is fantastic.
It's something that might stand, down the line too. It might stand out as a, something that this guy, he's going to continue to, produce, unique films and good films and strong films. But, I think down the line, people are going to look back at it and say, wow, this was something we shouldn't have maybe slept on, because and especially in 2017, doing a black and white movie, mm-hmm. And touching on that, that sort of subject matter from that perspective. I mean, it's extremely unique and it should be supported.
He's only done one other feature called Man Up, which I have not seen, but it's really like, I just can tell you, go see this movie. There's great performances from the guy who plays his brother, and their relationship, and the young girl, and his dad playing Mr. Kim. There's really good, and the young girl's brother and sister, and there's all this it's funny, we talk about introducing stuff in Death Note and then bailing on it.
Yeah.
This, he did a great job, this director, of introducing stuff, and we didn't get full explanation and resolution, but he introduced just enough to go, oh, there's some history here. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is specifically, but there's some history here. And it was all felt justified. It all felt real. It all felt human. And, this is a great young filmmaker, and I want to see more, and I hope people go support this film. So
cool. Check it out. Don't miss it.
Check it out.
Next movie is The Layover. Now, this is the Kate Upton movie that you saw, directed by William H. Macy, Sean.
Yes. So
first, tell us what it's about, because for people who aren't familiar with it.
Well, first of all, it's in black and white.
It takes place during the riots.
It's during the riots. And
and there's a book falls out of the sky.
Yeah. And then Willem Dafoe's, a porcupine. And it's a great movie, man. I was surprised. So basically, it's a film about Kate Upton and Alexandria Daddario, I think her name is. I'm actually hyper aware of her because I just watched the Baywatch remake and she's in that. So
her best part actually is
True Detective.
Yeah, True Detective. She's great in that. She plays the crazy mistress in True Detective. She does some fine acting in that.
But. Yeah, so I think that's kind of where she got.
She's not the mummy, is she? That's not the same
actress. No, I think it's a different actress. But she, so her and Kate Upton are best friends from forever, and Kate Upton's out there with her, American accent, trying to keep it together. She does actually a really good job. I shouldn't be difficult with that. But basically they're best friends, and Kate Upton's like the hot, crass woman, who sleeps with all the guys because, party, party, party. And Alexandra Daddario is, the straight-laced but beautiful woman who, can't catch a break, because her one friend is really hot. And
I love it when they take a completely knocked-down, drag-out, beautiful woman like Alexandra dictatorial mm-hmm. and make her like
the frumpy sidekick.
Yeah, the frumpy sidekick. Yeah. Like, oh my God, she is stunning.
Yeah,
give me a break.
Yeah,
I know. They really try to kind of play it up where it's like, oh, she's got such a hard time. I'm like,
that's Hollywood plain.
Oh God, yeah I know. That's how she's this girl next door. Oh, really? Ponytails and no makeup?
Right.
She could show up. If she walked through this door right now, ponytails, no makeup, jeans, baggy t-shirt and jeans.
We'd have still have to avert our eyes.
I know.
I would be like, hey, hi, I'm Graham Elwood.
This is the thing. No, I'm saying,
and you go, I know who you are.
I know who you are. That's why
I've heard about you.
I'm so excited for the earbuds release on September 12th on all digital platforms. I just wanted to come by this garage in the valley and say hello.
Yeah.
So, well, is that an unwanted t-shirt? Can I wear it?
Palm strike. Why not?
Why? Hello.
Oh, my God. I can get the last Sideshow Network mug.
Oh, my God. Can I slowly drink it, Graham?
Put some water in it and pour it on my head. Because it's such a hot day here in the valley. No, but they... So, yeah, but well, it actually was funny, real quick to that point, because being a podcaster and I've met a lot of performers and, you know, guests and all that, I remember the one time Jane Leaves came in, who was Daphne on Frasier. And it's one of those things where you're like, wow, you're a celebrity. I got to be careful because just the vibe, you know, and I get that sense, you know, but and so there are these friends and they both have like problems, you know, in their work lives, and they decide, well, you know what, let's take, you know, or Kate Upton's like, let's take an impulsive vacation to Florida, and they get on a plane, and in between them is sitting you know, a hot blonde dude, you know, with muscles. He's basically like a you know, Charlie Hunnam on growth hormone. Mm-hmm. And he's, so they're sitting there. And
was he mumbling?
Yeah, he comes swaggering in. He's like, oh, I gotta get in my,
gotta get on my Harley.
I'm a drifter. I don't know. You know, I gotta do, you know, get some intel. You know. But, yeah, so they both realize, like, oh, this man is hot and let's compete for him. And then there's a layover in St. Louis because they're going from Seattle to Florida, and they take a layover in St. Louis because of hurricanes. Mm-hmm. So they are in St. Louis, and they're competing back and forth with him, and silly things happen. And eventually, you know, it's basically a road comedy, you know. And
is it funny?
You know, there's some good jokes in it. I mean, really, there are some good jokes.
Let me answer that question with, well, you know.
That pause said a lot, young Merrick.
There's a handful of gags in it.
Well, thanks for finding the joy.
Yeah. No, I didn't. I
in an otherwise mediocre movie.
I mean, I didn't hate it, but also, well, this is the thing about this movie is like the acting is okay. You know, I don't know what it is. Maybe William H. Macy is hard of hearing because everybody is yelling at each other. They're like, you know, having these conversations that they should maybe be like, let's kind of keep this down because we're best friends and we shouldn't be fighting like this.
Well, maybe they didn't have the money for good sound equipment. Yeah. So they just needed everyone to yell. Put a speaker in the middle of it and yell.
And what is some of the direction, too? It's like, well, when you say that line, try to sound less attractive. You know?
Yell that line.
Right.
So be shrill.
Please shout really loud. And
so people don't see how your blue eyes could, like, melt.
Yes.
Steel.
Yeah. So there's... And then, you know, and it basically, it kind of feels like, do you guys remember the movie? I think it was 2003. It was The Sweetest Thing with Cameron Diaz, Christina Applegate. And
you know, I missed that, Sean. I didn't get a chance to see the Christina Applegate movie, but
no, it's actually I watched it by mistake once on Cinemax, and I rather enjoyed it. However, some of the premise and the ending kind of
sounds like something my dad would say when he didn't want to admit he was watching a skin flick.
I just watched a movie by mistake for an hour and a half.
Watch it for a taut 90 minutes, you know. But yeah, it was weird because it was one of the movie. I remember that movie. She was saying it just starts, and I'm like, am I watching a movie? Sometimes you can't tell if you're watching a movie because they don't like start it properly. And then you're like, oh, I'm watching a movie. I guess I'm watching it. So, but I watched it. Yeah, but it reminded me of this movie, of this layover movie. And I mean, there's some good gags in it. The acting's a bit broad. the story, there's definitely a lot of, you know, places where it's like, you know, maybe they should have thought this part out a bit better, you know, but I mean, it serves its purpose for, like, you know, a female driven comedy, you know, and it wildly fails a Bechdel test, but, you know, it's not bad. You know, I mean, I still enjoyed it. It was one of those things where I went to go see with Jen.
And it's a good movie for a plane, watching the layover.
100%, because it's about planes. And I have a story because, so I went to the Grove to see it. My first time seeing a movie at the Grove.
Really?
Yeah.
No. All these years in LA, I haven't gone to the Grove.
Yeah. Wait, really? I was going to say, because I've only been to the Grove a handful of times. And then this is the only place that was playing this movie at the time. So I went to the Grove and
this movie didn't get a wider release. That's weird.
Well, I mean, I think it will eventually.
Let's hope not.
So I'm sitting there and they had a showing. It said my showing was like at 10, but they had a showing. It said 8 o'clock, and I'm sitting there with Jen and we're waiting, and walking by me is William H. Macy and Alexandra Daddario and their crew. And they go into the 8 o'clock showing for some reason, but it's already 9:30, and I go to Jen, I'm like, are they going back in time to watch this? Like, what is going on?
Q&A.
There was nobody in there, though. I don't think anybody was in there. I think they were just by themselves, just watching this movie. And, you know, and it sucks, too, because every time I see a celebrity like that, I always have this impulse to be like, hey, it's that guy, you know, and I want to, like, hey, Billy, you know, and I wanted to be like, hey, maybe I can go and give him a piece of my mind, you know, about this film before it's over or something. And, you know, I didn't do that because I'm a pro, but
Billy Mace, what's up, pal?
Billy Mace
loved Rudderless.
Well, that's right, he did direct that too. Yeah. And a piece of trivia related to Sideshow, former Sideshow Network host Paul Mercurio reviewed that movie for the show that I booked him on. So,
wow. Yeah. Fantastic.
And actually, thinking about it, those movies are totally different, because Rudderless is about, like,
it's a sad thing. It's about a father's son died, and
he finds his songs. And this one's about, like, what if two girls fought over a man? You know, like, what would that
on be? An airplane?
On an airplane, you know, in the air. And there's a lot of, you know, I mean, there's some.
Did anybody say, I want these motherfucking snakes off this motherfucking plane?
I wish they did.
So you just want that on every plane movie, Chris?
I do. I really do. I just kind of do.
If it was Alexander Daddario, I would be like, yeah, she gets that line.
Actually, though, it would have kind of, they're shouting so loud, I'm surprised they didn't just add that in, because, you know, they're on this plane and they're, you know, as close as we are to each other, and they're like, har, 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 you know, just blowing each other's eardrums out, you know, and everybody else on the plane isn't
get you the attention of the air marshal.
I'm surprised. Yeah, no, it was okay.
I don't think I could see this movie, just because, I mean, I like William H. Macy. I like Alexander Daddario. I don't have a problem with Kate Upton. But I just feel like I would pick Alexander Daddario over Kate Upton just any day. Like, any day, I wouldn't even.
You would pick the frumpy best friend?
Yeah, I would pick the frumpy best friend.
Such a hideous woman.
Yeah, yeah. You mean you'd pick the 9.8 over the 9.9?
Well, it's not really a matter of. I mean, I guess
she wear glasses.
Yeah, exactly. Puts her hair, wears glasses. Oh boy, she's hideous. Then takes the glasses off. Oh my god.
Yeah, she's a runway model.
I mean, there's a twist at the end.
Oh boy. You know,
turns out they
missed their connection.
Turns out it was Earth all along, you know. but yeah, I mean, there's
the Planet of the Apes twist at the end. At the end, Alexander Daddario's going, you maniacs, you finally done it. Spoiler alert, guys, Planet of the Apes. She's all like, right, we're done talking about this movie.
Yeah. We have an ad read today.
Oh,
yes.
Shit.
Casper Mattress has come back. We love talking about Casper Mattress. Because the quality of the mattresses are so good. It has an in-house team of engineers that go through thousands of hours developing the Casper. It combines supportive memory foam for a sleep surface that's just got the right amount of sink and the right amount of bounce. Now, Graham, you are on a Casper mattress. How do you feel about it still?
Yes, I brought it with me. I'm sitting on the garage. No, I've had it for 2 years. I love this mattress. And I did like the, you know, they have the 100-night trial. And there's free shipping and return. So literally, sleep on it, and within 100 days, if you don't like it, you can send it back for free. So there's no risk.
There's no risk at all. And it's you'll get a great a mattress at a shockingly fair price.
And yeah, well, it's really affordable because they just they sell directly to you. So there's not like other mattress companies. You got to they get it from a distributor, and then there's a mattress store.
There's not an MMM, a mattress middleman.
No, no, there's not a 3Ms.
An M cubed.
You have one, Sean.
I do.
You like it?
I think it's fantastic. I had to get rid of the spring mattress that I had for 4 years because my spine.
Yeah.
And I was like immediately sleeping better. I wasn't even thinking about the 90-day trial because I'm so ready.
100-day trial.
Mm-hmm. I'm so enamored.
90 plus 10, you could call it if
yeah,
you want.
Yeah, yeah. 90 plus 5 plus 5. You know, but yeah, it's fantastic, and I still have it, and I look forward to continue sleeping on it and having great slumber.
And the other thing, don't just take our opinion. There's been over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 out of 5 stars, so
you need a new mattress, check them out, but we're not going to let you pay full price.
No,
go to casper.com/comedyfilmnerds and use the promo code comedy film nerds. Get $50 off your mattress purchase. Now that coupon code is only good for the mattress purchases. casper.com/comedyfilmnerds. Use the promo code comedy film nerds to save $50 off your mattress purchase.
Sleep tight, my little babies. we got some trailers.
And don't write in the book.
Don't. Oh God. Well, if you do, then the rules change. And shit, and then Kate Upton suddenly is whatever.
Yeah, we'll talk about some trailers.
Let's talk about some.
Did you see the snowman?
Oh,
oh my gosh. This is Michael Fassbender chasing down a serial killer who makes snowmen. You know, to taunt him. You know what it feels like? It's based on a quote best-selling novel. Mm-hmm. It really feels like some we're not getting another Girl with a Dragon Tattoo movie anytime soon. We feel like this might fill in the gaps. It's got that bleak winter feel to it because it's got a snowman.
Is there
snowman
like
building?
Creepy Halloween music?
Yeah. It reminded me a little bit of the Krampus when that movie went all the creepy snowman kept getting closer to the house. But I'll tell you, this trailer did not make me want to see the movie. It really felt like a by the numbers kind of murder mystery thriller where you'll be able to see the twists coming from miles away, and it didn't make me want to see the movie or read the book.
Is there a special appearance by James McAvoy as the reindeer?
Yeah. Now that would be great.
Also,
jingle.
Hello, I've brought you a present.
Also, this being a Fassbender movie, do we get to see his penis?
I don't know, Sean. I'm not sure what you're into. Yeah,
it's part of the snowman mold. I'm not sure.
So he's got an icy cock.
Yep. Every snowman that the serial killer builds, then he fucks.
He just finds a really big icicle, and he's like, bang, that's my calling card. No one's
going to stick it to the serial killer.
We haven't gotten dirty and weird in a while.
No, we haven't. We were due. We were yeah.
I was coming in.
We had to filth it up for Sean.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
I reference that because I had the movie Shame.
I remember.
Okay,
yeah.
I didn't want people being like, he just brought up a Fassbender's penis for no reason. I'm like,
yeah,
no,
we understand.
But no,
okay.
But it still felt that way. Yeah.
Hey, whatever. Yeah.
Whoever's in your spank bank, Sean. Yeah. We're all free here to be who we want to be in our lives.
You know, all right. If you want to get bendy with a snowman, that's fine.
All right, what's the other trailer?
The other one is Home Again. This is a Reese Witherspoon kind of romantic comedy.
Which is coming out this weekend.
Yes, coming out this weekend. Now, this one I actually found kind of engaging and fun, and it really felt just like it had the right mix of kind of heartfelt and funny. What happens is she kind of falls for a younger guy, and then him and his buddies move in, but then the ex shows up and wants to get back together. So
he moves in.
It's got some really funny, awkward moments to it in the trailer. So I'm hoping the movie delivers on what the trailer promises. So, but I found it engaging for sure.
Wow.
It's a Nancy Meyers.
I don't know what trailer you were watching, but I was like, oh, I cannot wait to avoid this film.
Well, it's a Nancy Meyers kind of deal, right?
Yes.
Right? I think exactly it is.
It's her daughter's directing it, Haley Myers.
Okay. Well, new generation. All right.
Yeah. So
The Intern 2. Yeah, can't wait.
If any of our parents were giant A-list actors, then we could...
The car careers would be a little easier. But, oh, so you didn't like the trailer?
No.
No, okay. All right, fair enough. Now this might have something to do with the fact that, you know, I have children, and, you know, I was into that kind of like, you know, that family mode, how she was kind of creating a new family out of these three guys that moved in. So
it seems like such a contrived premise.
That sounds right. Like a sitcom instead of a movie.
It's exactly. It
definitely felt that way, but it I don't know. It didn't bother me. I don't know. It got around my defenses.
All right.
So we'll see. But like I said, the trailer might have the best parts in it, and it might be a mess anyway. So let's go to DVD and Blu-rays. Now, All Eyes on Me. This was the Tupac Shakur movie.
Yeah, you know, I watched this, and, you know, I had some high hopes for this just because the casting, the guy looks exactly like Tupac.
It's spooky how much he looks
really,
like him.
It's really, that was amazing. But the problem is I think, you know, Straight Outta Compton set the bar so high for telling a story of this era of rap, and that this felt like a made-for-TV movie.
Right.
It just, you know, and it even has some of the same characters, the actual people in this movie that were in Straight Outta Compton. You know, we
like
talked
watching about, Ice Cube's son play his dad.
Yeah, and also they really. It just felt Straight Outta Compton felt more authentic, felt more, you know, just had a better script.
It was a better crafted film.
And this just felt like it had just sort of a kind of a paint by the numbers script, which was a little disappointing because the Tupac story is very engaging. He's a very interesting, polarizing person, whether you liked him, didn't liked him, whatever. Like, and to get a good version, I would love to see.
Died too young.
Yeah, died too young. Mm-hmm. The mistakes he made, the things he was or was not accused, you know, like all of that stuff. And they tried to cover it in this film, but it just sort of was like, it just fell into sort of two-dimensional cliches too often to where it wasn't. It just was like a bummer because Straight Outta Compton was like, and the kid that played Eazy-E in Straight Outta Compton, as I said, he should have gotten an Oscar nomination.
He was great.
So good. Mm-hmm. So it just didn't have that strength to it.
Was this Tupac movie? This was like being in production for like a long time, I feel.
Yeah.
I feel like it's always been like, we're going to make it. And then I think once Straight Outta Compton must have.
Yeah, and then I think when they saw the final product, they just sort of, that's where they gave it this kind of weird release date in the spring, and it just didn't.
Right, didn't gel.
They knew it didn't resonate. You know, it didn't resonate in the festivals. It didn't resonate with a lot of the big critics. So it just kind of, and I see why.
Yeah,
personally. Right.
It certainly resonated with the Billboard.
That kid were just
I was just gonna say for some reason they had a billboard up for like months over by my house, even after the movie was already out in theaters, but. I don't know. I'm interested because I at Podcast One, there was some shows, a show that I produced, and we had some people on from that movie come to talk about, you know, being in this movie. And I'm like, okay, you know, I have to give this a shot.
I'm glad I saw it in the sense that I wanted it to be, it's interesting. I'd be curious to see what you or anybody else listening to the show thinks because, maybe it was my problem. I just couldn't. It was hard to just not compare it to Straight Outta Compton because Straight Outta Compton I thought was such a solid movie. But anyway.
And the next movie is Rough Night. This was that weird girls comedy about the...
They murdered.
That was also...
Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah, yeah. And part of it was like even based on an actual incident that happened in, I believe, Australia or New Zealand. Yeah.
I don't know if I like that now because I was going to watch this and now I'm like, oh, that actually, it's a real story?
I saw part of it and, you know, you kind of wanted it to be funny. I really think Kate McKinnon is really funny.
Yes.
And I wanted it, but it just sort of.
It's that syndrome of like, get funny people in and not so funny projects and make them try to carry it.
Yeah,
they can't.
No.
It's not their fault.
No, it isn't.
So, you know, you give a brilliant comedian good material, they can bring it to the next level. You give them mediocre material, there's not a lot they can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it sounds like that's what happened.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about the site spotlight and the fan feedback. CJ has a review of American Made that is up. So if you want to check that movie out, see what he thought earlier, that is on comedyfilmnerds.com.
I saw the that's the Tom Cruise movie, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I saw the trailer for that before one of some show on Hulu. And
doesn't it feel like a 90s movie?
Well, it feels like a 90s movie, and it also feels like it's like a Netflix show or something. It just doesn't feel like a movie. It's like, and you're, then you see like Tom
Cruise. It's got a giant movie star in it.
Right, but it doesn't, but you're like, what's Tom Cruise doing? What happened? What's he doing in here? And then, you know.
I'm sure this was a project he really wanted to do, too. So I'm sure you'll see a producer credit for him somewhere.
It's weird. I'm oddly.
Because I'm interested in the story.
I'm oddly excited and interested to see it. But for that, for those reasons of like. These two reasons. One, the story sounds, it's loosely based on stuff that actually, I've been fascinated from watching that show Narcos and a bunch of documentaries about that era of the cocaine business, you know, which apparently is now back.
Back, baby.
Yeah, coke's back, everyone. All you young comics doing coke, you're hacking.
What about Wall Street? Is it back on Wall Street?
Yeah, let's hope. Trump's coked up. Yeah. So I'm curious about that. And when Tom Cruise gets in a project that he doesn't over Tom Cruise-y it, over Scientology it, when he just comes in and, you know, he can be really amazing. Right. You know, so
there's a reason why he's a big movie star.
There is. You know what? Fucking so good at being a big movie star.
You know what it feels like, just from watching the trailer? It feels like Blow.
Right, exactly. It is. It's another story from like the Blow universe or something like that.
The connected Blow universe.
Yeah. So I mean, again, that was a very the connected Blow.
Oh man, maybe they'll cross over with the Mummy.
Yeah.
Mummy crossover. So and then fan feedback. There's some comments on the Comedy Film Nerds YouTube page. The lady giggle said was talking about we did a kidnap spoiler, and she said the movie reminded me when Denzel Washington would do random hero movies. The movies were simple, straightforward, and they made him look awesome. Yeah, like Man on Fire and Safe House and those types of movies.
Right.
Like, and that's a great comment, Lady Giggles, because this is why I was so excited and then actually enjoyed Kidnapped. Like, this is what she's gonna do. She's gonna do her Denzel Washington, Liam Neeson. Go for it. I'm all for
this.
It
is Halle Berry, right?
Halle Berry.
Yeah, yep.
Mm-hmm. So I missed that movie, but so it's good, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, we split on it.
I thought it was amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, thanks for your guys' comments on the YouTube channel. We appreciate those.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Coming out this week. We've been waiting for this.
We've been talking about this. My prediction for this movie is it's going to be huge. It's going to be huge this weekend for a number of different reasons. It's already getting into the cultural zeitgeist. I'm reading articles about how clowns are losing work to like parties that are getting canceled. Wow. Like because this movie is coming out. And also there's like reported, you know, when we saw that creepy clown scare, like those are increasing again too around this movie. So the studio was like, the studio was like, we couldn't but promotion like this.
Yeah.
So, and you know, the early buzz is that it's a really good movie, and seeing it on tomorrow, I can't wait to see it.
Yeah.
It looks really good. The only thing that scares me a little bit is the length. Horror movies, 2 hours and 15 minutes is a long horror movie.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's a long horror movie.
That's the scariest part.
And it's really just the first half, because if you know the book, it goes through these characters as kids, but then also as adults, too.
The book goes into
Yeah, so this is really like part one.
I'm going to have to go back and watch
But it looks it looks good and creepy, man.
Yeah, I'm going to go back and watch the original version.
With Harry Anderson?
Yeah, you know.
And Tim Curry, yeah, there was a TV version of it, a miniseries.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't have the...
Many years ago.
You know, and what's his face? Richard Harris, he's in that too. John Boy!
Oh my God, that's right, I forgot.
Annette O'Toole?
It's interesting to see, because it's directed by Andy Muschietti, and, you know, he directed the movie Mama, and he directed... you know, a couple other foreign films. Mama was based on a short that they then made into a feature, which is, you know, with Jessica Chastain.
Which is another horror movie, right?
Yeah, it's another horror movie. So, I'm not a big... I don't get that excited about horror movies.
I know, you don't like them.
I don't like them, but this one is like, man, maybe this is just...
And we're going to do a spoiler on it.
Ooh. Oh, so I have to see it.
So you have to see it, yes.
You wanna... That's not fair.
I want to say what's funny was, so I was driving home the other day, and another movie poster story. I'm at a stoplight, and there is a bus ad for It, and then right behind it, there's the billboards, and it has Flatliners on it. And I'm thinking, like, if I were a time traveler from 1991 and I came directly into 2017, I'd be like,
why are they showing the same properties over and over again?
What happened? Why is this the same? Is this the same movie? Like, what's going on? Yeah, I would be very confused.
Yeah, studios love going through their libraries and regurgitating things. All right. But this one, I will say, the trailers look good and creepy. Although one trailer specifically was like, well, you like Stranger Things, you're going to like this movie. Right. It really focused on kids on bikes is...
Am I the only one that didn't feel Stranger Things was as engaging as everybody else thinks it is?
I loved it.
Oh,
I,
how
I,
dare you.
I was so engaged by it.
I love Stranger Things, watching
it on my couch, Stranger right. Things. I'd be like, oh God. Like, so that's honestly that trailer is what got me to go, man, maybe I'll watch it. If it's like a Stephen King Stranger Things-ish.
Right. Because one of the premises of the book, and this is also in the film, is that it's not just a creepy clown that's kidnapping kids. What happens is, you know, it's kind of an evil presence that permeates through the entire town, causing, you know, the whole town and the population to be off. So there's a lot more going on to the movie, which I'm really interested to see. So I think it's going to be good. And yeah, and it's... oddly enough, it's like one of the biggest releases of August because there's been September. because we've had such a dead zone in August. This is like the first big movie we've had in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's true. We haven't had anything big movie in a while. So, all right, guys. Well, that's episode 385 of the Comedy Film Nerds podcast. Sean Merrick, where can people find your work on the worldwide internet?
Well, you can find, first of all, Worst Collection Ever on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. You can find it on Stitcher, SoundCloud, everywhere. Also, I have another podcast. I do two podcasts now. Another one's called I Can Talk Kayfabe, which is a pro wrestling podcast where myself and my friend Joe Todaro go through wrestling magazines from the 80s and 90s and basically give the same Worst Collection Ever treatment to those magazines.
Oh, that's great.
And talk about, you know, because we're wrestling fanboys, so we have a lot of opinions and we kind of just break down the stuff because back, you know, in the 80s, in the 90s, you know, these magazines were basically like the original fanfic written by men with mullets and mustaches for a living. And it was a very profitable industry. And that's how I grew up with them. So we do that show, and you can find that on iTunes as well as I Can Talk Kayfabe, which is KAYFABE. Look that up, and please rate, subscribe, and tell friends about those shows. I would really appreciate that. And also, I'm on Twitter at Angry Hero Sean. That's SHAWN. Angry Hero Sean on Twitter, Instagram. Instagram, I like to post a lot of stupid comic book panels and that I find. And I've also taken to recently...
Do you ever really get them pulled for copyright reasons?
Not at all. Not at all. And I'm waiting for that. I'm ready for fighting. But I've been...
Fair use, bitches.
Do they do that?
Every once in a while, we got something pulled from Instagram. Yeah. We did like a movie still or something.
Really? Yeah. Instagram pulled?
Yeah, Instagram.
They pulled something for like a music thing.
It was the first time I got it. And I was like, this is weird. I've never gotten an Instagram message before. And then I emailed Dane and I was like, we took it off.
You can check all that stuff out. And
Before I forget, Sean, one of the things, we also have our Patreon ad sponsor.
Yeah.
We forgot to mention him.
Yes.
This is Frightfully Uninformed. It's a podcast that watches mostly classic horror movies to figure out horror movie fandom. Frightfullyuninformed.com. And that is the Patreon tier. Remember, we will mention your name and website every single episode for the $50 Patreon tier.
Yeah. So you get a lot of bumps on whatever your little business is. It's only $50 a month to get mentioned in anywhere from 6 or more podcasts.
Four. We only do them on the main.
That's a good deal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we don't do them on the spoilers.
Oh, that's dumb.
Yeah. We can. Should we add? Should we add? Should we add a little more value to it?
A little more value. Well, Ed,
you're waiting for your book.
All right, as of today...
Yep.
Yeah, you're going to get a mention on the spoilers as well.
And real quick, I just want to plug the Los Angeles Podcast Festival preview night at the Hollywood Improv on October 5th here in Hollywood. We have four shows throughout the night. You got Rob Has a Podcast and Who Weekly in the main room and Time Suck with Dan Cummins and The Raven Effect in the lab. So go to hollywood.improv.com to check out tickets for that.
Now, Sean, let me ask you a question about the preview night. If you have a PodFest badge, does that get you into any of the shows, or are they individually ticketed?
They're individually ticketed, but if you have a weekend badge, you do get in for free.
Oh, fantastic.
So that is something, and it is listed on the website,
okay,
on the Improv site. So if you are a preview PodFest weekend pass holder, you can get into these shows for free, and we
so you get an extra day of the festival.
That's
then.
What I'm saying. That's what we've done every year. It's fantastic. Right. So go to lapodfest.com, get a weekend pass, and it's good for all events. Friday, Saturday, Sunday at the Biltmore, and you get Thursday night preview night at the Hollywood Improv. So check it
out. Can't beat it.
We're adding more shows. It's good business. Episode 385, and of course, you can pre-order earbuds on iTunes, and it goes wide September 12th.
Yeah, it will be everywhere.
Everywhere.
Except Comedy Film Nerds for 45 more days.
Yes, we can't sell it on Comedy
but,
Film Nerds.
But like I said, it's going to be everywhere, and the other thing that'll help too, you guys, is if you start putting reviews on, like, say, IMDb. Scrogulous put a great review on IMDb, on iTunes, because all that starts to track. And if you guys could put good reviews of the movies, that would definitely help as well.
Yeah, even if you've already watched it.
Right.
And like, just
if you
go
bought
to
it
iTunes.
From us, yeah, and then you can just put the
but
review.
But if you haven't, you've been waiting to get it on all these platforms, fantastic.
Right.
Buy the shit out of it next week.
Yes, please, buy the shit out of it.
all right, thank you so much, Sean Merrick.
You're welcome.
My name is Graham Elwood.
So, and one other thing I wanted to mention, the new episode of Conversations from the Abyss has dropped.
Oh, yeah.
This is called The Solicitor, and it features David Huntsberger and Michael Carnacci about a solicitor selling something unusual over the phone. And Apple Podcasts gave us a nice tweet, which was really cool.
You got yourself a new noteworthy, too.
What?
You got yourself a new noteworthy, too.
A new and noteworthy, yes. Yeah. Yeah, so we Apple's been supporting it. It's been really cool. Thank you for the great reviews. And these are really short. It's like 13, 16 minutes each. It's little bite-sized creepiness. Like, if you like The Twilight Zone, you'll like the show. And I want to thank you guys for the support on it.
Yeah, and also the Political Vigilante podcast, I've now basically been taking the audio from my YouTube channel. So if you want to consume my progressive ranting against the the kleptocracy and the duopoly and the oligarchy.
That's a lot of ease.
It's a lot of larkies. That's a lot of larkies. go to...
what was the first one?
Duopoly.
Was it cryptology? What did you say?
Oh, kleptocracy.
What's a kleptocracy?
That's a corporation's... run a country. It's not a democracy.
Oh, okay.
Oligarchy is a bunch of powerful families.
Okay.
Like the Bushes and the Clintons. Just, I don't know, just random names I'm throwing out there.
So this duopoly, can I play it at McDonald's?
Yes. You get a stuffy hat with
and a free shake.
And a free shake. And you, if you get enough of the little passes on the board, you get to oppress the poor.
Oh, fantastic.
It's good stuff. So yeah, that's actually in the news and politics section of iTunes. It is not, Political Vigilante is not in the comedy section. So again, positive reviews from all this stuff.
It all helps. It helps
attract.
Free stuff,
Conversation from the Abyss, Political Vigilante, earbuds. Check it out. My name's Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember, Han shot first. Write it in the book.
Unless the rules change.